It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. On Tuesday, Pope Francis was formally installed at the Vatican. And in his inaugural Mass in St. Peter's Square, the new Pope said the Church must be a servant to all, including the poor and the weak. An individual who shares that philosophy is the Bishop of Pittsburgh, David A. Zubik, a Pittsburgh native who has held the post for over 6 years now. Like Pope Francis, Bishop Zubik has brought with him the experience of a dedicated pastor who, in the opinion of many, has served the Church well. He joins us now in Studio A. Bishop Zubik, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, it's good to be with you and to meet you today for sure, and to be with all of your listeners.
And if any of our listeners have a comment or question for our guest, whether you are part of Pittsburgh's Catholic Church or not, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Pope Francis is the first pontiff, Bishop Zubik, from the Americas, and is described as an austere Jesuit intellectual who modernized Argentina's conservative Catholic Church. As you watched the former Jorge Mario Bergoglio ease into his papacy, what do you see him bringing to the Vatican? What qualities?
Well, not only to the Vatican, but I think to the entire world, not simply to Catholics and non-Catholics, and not simply to Christians and non-Christians, but I think to the entire world, you have a world leader who stepped on the stage and very quickly became very comfortable in his role, simply because here's a man who doesn't just talk the talk, he walks the walk. And I think that as the new pope has begun to focus a great deal of attention on simplicity, on humility, on genuine joy, you can see that in the smile on his face, you know that that's all coming from a depth within himself. And when I say that he doesn't simply talk the talk but walk the walk, we know from his life in Argentina that he took a very simple lifestyle with a deep focus on the needs of other people. And whether he would be washing the feet and kissing the feet of people who had AIDS, or he was making a particular appeal for people who would perhaps be sold into slavery, here's a man who has a deep sense of Jesus Christ and of living out the mission of Jesus in his life. You know, a lot of times people will look and say, well, you know, finally, you know, we're going to have somebody there who's going to be showing us the concern for the poor. Step back a little bit and say, well, the Catholic Church has always been about serving the needs of the poor ever since we were founded. And I think almost in every instance, the Church reaches out to people who are poor. Maybe we don't spread the news of that as well as we should. But it seems to me that what's happening with Pope Francis is that he's letting us know that we can't get hidden in maybe offering $50 for this particular campaign that would help people who need some assistance. He's saying, are you ready to put your own skin in the game? Are you willing to do something in your own life to personally get involved with somebody who has some needs and who needs to see those needs and a heartfelt response from each one of us? You know, certainly from us who are Catholics and have Pope Francis as our leader. But I think he also exemplifies a challenge to everybody in the world.
Do you feel in some ways now newly inspired by this new pope?
I do, absolutely. And I think anytime there are new beginnings, you see new possibilities, you see new energy. You know, clearly, I go back and look at the DVR of the announcement that came, you know, because I had it taped on my TV, and have just gone back to recapture again the excitement that I felt. You know, first of the anticipation, you know, once the excitement was beginning to build in St. Peter's Square and the bells were ringing, I thought about what it was like 8 years ago when I was standing in the front row of St. Peter's Square when Pope Benedict was announced. And so I could relive that moment. But then, of course, the anticipation, well, I wonder who it's going to be. And there were so many different names that were put forward and say, well, ultimately, who will be the one who comes out on that world stage as the new pope? And I think everybody was shocked because Nobody expected, really, that the choice would have been now the new Pope Francis. Nobody would have expected the name of Francis, despite all the speculation that was done. That wasn't a name that really came to the fore. I don't know that there were so many people who would have expected that the Pope would have been elected from the Americas, that for the first time in over 1,000 years, a non-European would be elected as the Pope. I don't think anybody expected that if for the first time in the history of the papacy, now the 266th Pope, that he would be from a religious order, from the Jesuit community, the first from the Jesuit community. And I think, what that says to me, in my own journey of faith, is that this really was God's choice. It was not a political choice. And that because it was such a surprise to everybody, I think it says when you're dealing with somebody who's going to be stepping in the shoes of Peter, just as Christ looked at Simon and said, from now on, you're going to be called the Rock and you're going to be my vicar. Once again, it's happened again with the election of Pope Francis.
You were in Rome when Pope Benedict spoke to the flock for the final time and said goodbye and lifted off in the helicopter to be taken to his new residence. And I saw some video of you watching and waving as others were. What was going through your mind as you watched that scene unfold?
The same thing that happened to me when I was there when Pope Benedict was elected. I had to pinch myself to say, am I really standing here seeing this actually happen? And whenever I go to Rome, and by the way, I was there not knowing, of course, this was going to happen. I made the arrangement 6 months ago to visit the Pittsburgh seminarians who are studying in Rome. And when I go there, I stay at the seminary. And on the sixth floor of the seminary building is a roof that people can come out and look over the hills of Rome. And so we all went up there. 250 seminarians, faculty members, waiting for that final moment, hoping that the Pope was going to fly over North American College. And about 10 minutes of five, all the bells of Rome began to ring. And I had a lump in my throat. It was an emotional moment, not simply that I was standing there, but also to think that this particular history in the Catholic Church and all that Pope Benedict had done so well over the course of 8 years was now coming to an end, and we were going to begin a brand new chapter. And we were standing there, and all of a sudden, from behind the great cupola of St. Peter's, the helicopter comes up and begins to fly. And all of a sudden, it did an about-face, and instead of coming towards us, it went another direction. Everybody was so disappointed because we knew that Castel Gandolfo was in the direct line between St. Peter's and the North American College was really in direct line from St. Peter's and Castel Gandolfo. But what happened was the Pope had decided to have the helicopter go around the parameters of Vatican City State and then came towards us. And the helicopter was low enough that there we were waving American flags, and some people were waving the flag of Bavaria. And some people felt, and I don't doubt it for a moment, the Pope was sitting on that side of the helicopter. I'm sure that he waved. But it was neat to be able to be there in such large numbers on that rooftop to let this guy know how grateful we were for all that he did in his leadership over 8 years.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and we are talking with David Zubik, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh. We welcome your comments and questions. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. That's 412-246-2002, and our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. Pope Francis, as you mentioned, is a Jesuit, the first Jesuit Pope. Jesuits are also known as God's Marines, with missionary work as a core value. The Jesuits have been known for spreading Catholicism throughout the world. How do you see this Pope doing that, spreading the message?
Well, that's really the responsibility of every Pope, clearly, and it's that $50 word that we use, evangelization, is really a task of every Christian to spread the good news of Jesus. But obviously the leader is critically important in that. And that's certainly something that Pope Benedict tried to make aware in everybody when he called for a year of faith that we're a part of until the very end of November this year, that everybody take a little bit more seriously what it means to tell the message of Jesus. I think the fact that Pope Francis comes from the Jesuit community, and because of the charism of the Jesuits to be engaged in sharing the good news of Jesus, I think Pope Francis has already begun to show what that means in, if you will, common, ordinary ways. You know, while he's a brilliant theologian, everything that he has done and all the words that he has used touch to the human heart. You know, think about a week ago or this past Sunday when Pope Francis was giving his first Angelus blessing. And for those of you who aren't aware of it, every Sunday when the Pope is in Rome, he appears at his window. And the Angelus is a very important prayer at 12 noon that honors the Blessed Mother and her call to be the Mother of Jesus. But then afterwards, he gives a little talk. And the talk that he gave was not based on some of the great theologians of the past or the theologians of the present. He made a reference to a grandmother who had been in one of the parish churches in Buenos Aires. And the grandmother had come up to him and had said how grateful she was to have experienced God's mercy in her life and said, you know, I hope that I never forget how endless is God's mercy, and I hope I never take that for granted. Well, the Pope used that as a springboard to give that same message to everybody. And he talked about it in very common, ordinary terms. And after he was finished, he said to everybody who was there, now go have a good cena, an Italian word for go, and have a nice meal. But don't forget the message. God's mercy is everlasting, and always beg for it. One example. The second one. Think about his, inaugural homily at his installation. You know, he said, don't be afraid to do three things. Don't be afraid to be kind. Don't be afraid to be tender. Don't be afraid to be a servant. I mean, those are words that everybody can understand, but he meant them more than words. He meant them to be actions in each of our lives.
The Jesuits are known for encouraging toleration for other religions. How important is it for the Pope or the Bishop, for that matter, to both preach and practice this tolerance of other faiths, which Pittsburgh has many?
Sure. Could I use a different word?
Sure.
Because I think toleration can sometimes mean, well, I'm going to put up with.
Sure.
But I think I'd like to use more collaboration, cooperation. And I think he's already shown that. You know, one of the first things he did, he called the chief rabbi of Rome, Rabbi Deceni. And I had a chance to meet the rabbi about a year ago when I was on a pilgrimage to Rome. He called him personally and said, I really would like to invite you to come to my installation. Will you come? And there have been photos of how thrilled the rabbi was. That when he was in Argentina, he worked with Muslims. There's a very famous encounter that Pope Francis, when he was archbishop in Buenos Aires, went to an evangelical Christian assembly. And during the course of the service that was there, they said, do you mind if we give you a blessing? And he said, sure. You know, I need a blessing. Give me a blessing. And he was blasted by some Catholics and said, why would you ever accept a blessing from evangelicals? After all, they're pulling people away from our church. And the Cardinal Archbishop said, hey, wait a minute. Don't go blaming them. You know, we have to blame ourselves for what we haven't done to keep people within our congregation. And so I think that, you know, that kind of honesty is refreshing, you know. And I think that we have to be, you know, also aware of the fact that, you know, the Pope is going to defend, with great vigor the teachings of the church. But he's also going to defend the call that we have to look for the common ground that exists among us. The differences are there, and sometimes we focus way too much on the differences. But he's basically saying, you know, there's a common ground here. We really need to work together. And the first step in that common ground is we got to have respect for other people. You know, I don't know if many people know this. It was just announced yesterday that next week, of course, is Holy Week. And on Holy Thursday morning, Pope Francis is going to be celebrating the Mass, where all the oils that are used in the Catholic Church for the next year will be blessed, and that would be for the Diocese of Rome. But in the evening, for the Mass of the Last Supper, Pope Francis has decided not to have Mass in one of the great basilicas. He's going to a prison, and to have Mass with the prisoners and to wash their feet and to kiss their feet as Jesus did at the Last Supper. Once again, the common touch that's there. So he's taken his charism as a Jesuit to evangelize, and he's doing it in ways in which people say, well, boy, if he can do that in simple ways, I better look for some of those ways in my own life too.
Well, he has quickly established himself as a very humble man, you know, paying his own hotel bill, picking up his own luggage at a Vatican hotel. He has generally shed the luxuries of previous popes. Is this something you can relate to particularly? Because you've taken a humble path. You've chosen not to live in the bishop's mansion in Pittsburgh. As I understand it, you've been living in the seminary. Does this pope's rejection of special privileges signal a pontificate marked by greater collegiality between the pope and bishops around the world?
I believe it does, but I also want to be cautious and invite people not to make judgments based on some of those externals. I think every leader who is going to be worth his salt has to be really true to himself and to see that when we're called to be leaders, we can't be focusing on our needs or our pleasures. We have to focus on the needs of the people whom we're called to serve and even beyond that. And I think every person has to decide on a style that is going to support his understanding of his call. And that's where I think, you know, Pope Francis is doing a great service of showing that, you know, in his own conviction, his life obviously has been a life of not focusing on his own needs but the needs of others. And I think that's got to be the call for every single leader to be able to do that. And I have, you know, my own style of leadership that, you know, that I know is genuine. It's coming from deep within myself, what I need to be able to do to be a good pastor. And I also realize in my own life that I can always become better whenever, whenever I meet with some of the leaders, for example, and I meet with lots of different leaders of our area, you know, and one of the first questions I'll say, you know, I'm going to pick your brain. Tell me how I can be a better shepherd. Well, I think that what Pope Francis is doing in a much broader way is saying, how can I be a better shepherd for God's people? This is what I'm doing thus far. And I think it's touching people's hearts, because I think it's not only an example, but it's also a challenge to each of us that we got to realize how important it is more and more to step out of ourselves, focus on the needs of other people before we are focusing on our own.
It's Essential Pittsburgh, and I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is David Zubik, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh. We'll continue our discussion and welcome your calls as Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA. Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're honored to have as our guest today David Zubik, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh, with Palm Sunday 2 days away and the start of Holy Week. And, of course, a week from Sunday is Easter Sunday. We invite you to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. And we have Evelyn from Swissvale on the line who has a question for Bishop Zubik. Evelyn, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. My question to the bishop is, why are you assessing all of the churches in the diocese to support a high school in the north area that will serve only a few of the wealthy parishes?
Well, first of all, Evelyn, I guess I'm interested in where you got the information, because it's completely false.
The churches aren't being assessed?
No, not at all. You know, and I have a feeling, I have a sense of where you're coming from. Let me take a guess and see if I'm right on this. I think, you know, more and more people are becoming aware of the fact that for the first time in the 170-year history of the Diocese of Pittsburgh, we're doing a campaign that's called the Church Alive campaign.
Right.
And what that campaign is about, and, you know, if you haven't already seen a copy of the case statement for it, you know, it's a campaign that, by and large, in the greatest majority of the campaign, is to go to non-material needs, you know, to be able, for example, to help Catholic Charities in its healthcare clinic, or to do endowment funds for students who want to come to a Catholic school, or to help education programs to prepare an increasing number of seminarians, or how we help leadership development for lay people, or how we pay attention to the needs of the our senior citizens by reaching them the way that they most associate with the church is through, our cable national television network. But most important of all, that the biggest part of the campaign is really to help every single parish in the diocese, all 203, to each parish to be able to determine what kind of dreams do they have that they haven't been able to fulfill heretofore. Now, the issue about the new high school, that's a separate entity. I have not assessed any parish, not even the parishes in the North Hills, about the high school. And where that came from is you may or may not know that about 5 years ago, St. Killian Parish out in the North Hills became the very first brand new Catholic school in 44 years. And when I went up to dedicate that school, the parents said, you know what, we need a Catholic high school out here. You know, we want to send our kids to a Catholic high school because of the large numbers of people that are there. And once again, I wouldn't make a decision like that without a great deal of thought and consultation. And when we checked with everybody around, there was very strong support to say there was a need for that. The reason why, because that's one of the important roles that the church has, is to pass on the good news. And it can be passed in a number of different ways, but Catholic schools is one of them. And so, you know, the whole business of a campaign to build the school is not something that's an assessment for every parish in the diocese. There are a lot of people that are supporting the building of that school. But getting back to the campaign, you know, the campaign that we've set, the goal that we've set for the campaign is $125 million. What we basically said out of the campaign, one of the tangibles, that means bricks and mortar, would go to that high school, but it's only 3% of the $125 million, which is about $10 million. But I think it's to support what other great high schools in the diocese have done, Oakland Catholic, Central, Quigley, Sarah, Seton LaSalle, Canavan, St. Joseph's High School, you know, all of them. It's a matter to say that's where the greatest growth in population is taking place, certainly in our diocese, but even in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And we really felt it was important to have the high school there. But I just want to clarify, the campaign that's going on is not about the high school. It's about reaching out to people who are in need. And that I think, has been one of the reasons why it's gotten off to a very strong start, because people realize we're not having the money for the campaign to go into bricks and mortar, but to go to help people.
Evelyn, hopefully that takes care of your question.
I have one comment about that. I can remember when they moved Our Lady of Mercy Academy from Oakland to Monroeville, and, you know, it just wasn't supported. Even though people want to have a Catholic education, they needed to have you know, everybody connected with it. And since they closed North Catholic to open this one, then I'm afraid that the same thing will happen out there, because they already pay high taxes for school taxes in there. And to pay more for a Catholic one is, you know, another.
Well, Evelyn, first of all, North Catholic is still open. It's not closed. But the issue is that there are no longer a lot of young people in the North Catholic area. So what we're doing with all this is that North Catholic, in its rich tradition, now becomes a part of the new Cardinal Ward North Catholic High School. And so, you know, North Catholic High School continues to exist until the new high school begins. When you're talking about in the past, you know, with some of the high schools, it was true at that point that the bishops did do assessments of parishes to help build the school. The school that I was vice principal of for 7 years, Quigley Catholic High School in Baden, when it was being built in 1967, all the parishes in Beaver County were assessed to build that school. That's not the case with Cardinal Ward North Catholic. And as I'm saying to you, the people there, in very large enthusiastic numbers, said, you know, we really need to have a high school here. We really want to send our kids there. And I can tell you already, you know, the brand new school is not going to open until August of 2014, but we've already got over 150 parents who have are registering their students to come in. So there seems to be a great deal of excitement about it. But I appreciate your question.
Let's go to Greg in Allison Park. Greg, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Bishop.
Hi, Greg. Hello. Are you?
This is Greg Swiderski.
Oh, Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Glad, at least out here in Allison Park, the sun is shining.
Good. Well, it's not shining here on the south side. At least it wasn't when I came in the studio.
I was raised on the south side. Everything about Pope Francisco is so encouraging, and I particularly hope his leadership for dealing with the Vatican bureaucracy, which will take a lot of guts and effort. My concern is his health. Pope John Paul I was only in office for 30 days, and from what I understand or read, it was not taking care of himself or his health led to his early passing away, and he too had a smile and an image of hope for the church. So I'm concerned, and I don't know whether you know anything about the well-being and health of this new pope.
Well, you know, I know there's been a little bit of attention that was focused on the fact that he lost the lung when he was in his early 20s. But I think, you know, talk to most doctors, they'll tell you you can in fact, operate with one lung. But, Greg, I think from my observation, I want to tell you, if I were standing on the Pope-mobile the way the Pope Francis is, I can tell you, I don't think I'd be able to jump off that Pope-mobile as fast as the Pope did, you know, when he went out to, especially when he went out to give a blessing and kiss the man who had a severe disabilities, or, you know, how fast that he moves when he's going from one direction to the next. It's true, you know, chronologically, you know, he has the age of 76, but he doesn't look it, and he certainly doesn't act it. And I think, you know, he even speaks about that himself. So I kind of admire his energy. And from all that I see and all that we all have a chance to see on the world stage, he certainly seems to have a great, great, great deal of energy. And I think that bodes well, I think, for all of us in the church, but I think it bodes well for people of faith all throughout the world.
Greg, thank you for your call. That's Greg from Allison Park. We're talking here on Essential Pittsburgh with David Zubik, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh. Bishop Zubik, you are known as someone who developed strong programs to address misconduct by clergy and others in ministry. People have expressed their concerns about this pope. A syndicated columnist named Melinda Hannenberger wrote a piece that appeared in yesterday's Post-Gazette in which she referred to reports about Pope Francis that are not all that glowing, and in fact charged the former Archbishop of Buenos Aires with, in which he became Archbishop in 1998, with standing silent on sex abuse allegations against priests in his diocese and refusing to meet with abuse victims. Have you heard anything about this? How much, if at all, do these reports concern you?
First of all, I'm not sure about the credibility of the reports. I don't know a whole lot about Pope Francis's tenure when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, but it's interesting you asked the question, because I just read last night an interview that now the Pope Francis gave in 2012, which was just last year, and he blasted, you know, the evil, you know, the crime of pedophilia, and spoke about the need for the church to be very strong in its protection of children and young people. And, you know, I think that taking a look at the strong stance that he takes on issues of justice and morality, I think we're going to be hearing a lot that's going to prove the assessment of, you know, some journalists to be wrong, that I think he is out there, I think, knowing what a critical issue that is for the church, and how important it is for us to continue to regain credibility, but also to recognize that the issue of pedophilia is a problem that really infects society all over the place, and that, you know, there are lots of other areas too where that evil, you know, that crime is perpetrated, even in the family. But I'm not aware of anything that would. I didn't see the article. I didn't have a chance to read yesterday's Post-Gazette. I didn't see the article, but from what I've read about the new pope's comments long before he became pope, would contradict those criticisms.
And the writer was citing reports out of the Washington Post. As to the credibility of them, it remains to be seen. But it has been suggested that Pope Francis needs to fully acknowledge the extent of the child abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. What would you recommend that he do? How would you suggest that he go about addressing this?
Well, I think it's going to be important that he make statements about how the church needs to continue to work at eradicating the causes. I think he needs to be able to show and demonstrate being people who have been victims. I know that Pope Benedict did so when he came to visit Washington, D.C., and I wouldn't have a doubt in my mind that Pope Francis is going to do the same kind of a thing. I think he will, of course, be continuing to evaluate, all the educational programs in the Catholic Church to make sure that not only in the United States but through every country that there are deliberate steps that are taken to make sure that people can, in fact, be protected. Because the first important thing that we're really dealing with here is the sacredness of life, and that a person's life has to be respected. And while pedophilia and ephebophilia are illnesses, the reality is that people get hurt by others who perpetrate behaviors that really destroy other individuals. And I would be able to guarantee, I'm sure, that Pope Francis is going to speak out very strongly on that issue. It's early in his pontificate. He's only been pope now for, 10 days? So I think we're going to be hearing him speak out on a lot of important issues.
Many see the installation of a new pope as an opportunity for change. What, if any, changes would you like to see the Catholic Church explore?
Well, I think the biggest change has already begun to happen, in that I think the pope is calling on each one of us personally to change. Because we do live in a world that calls us to be very insular, to be the self-made woman, to be the self-made man, to see that what marks us as a success, is the kind of home or apartment that we have or how much money we have on our checkbooks. And with that kind of insular thinking, that's how poverty increases, because there's a lack of sensitivity to people who are in need. And I think that where you get the cue of the direction of where the Pope is going is those three words that I used a little bit earlier from his homily, when he said, don't be afraid to be kind, don't be afraid to be gentle, don't be afraid to be a servant. Those three words, kind, tender, and servant, are not popular practices in the world in which we live. And I think he deliberately spoke them as a wake-up call to all of us, that there's got to be a conversion of heart for all of us, whether we're Catholic or not Catholic. There's got to be a sense of seeing that, what brings the greatest joy in a person's life is not satisfying my own personal needs, but helping to reach out to other people who are lonely. People can be poor in lots of ways, not only financially, but can be poor in terms of freedom. They can be poor in terms of relationships, poor in not feeling loved, And I think that that's the first and greatest change that I think that the Pope has already begun to inaugurate. And I think that, some of the other changes that might happen, we're going to have to kind of stay tuned and read his letters as he sends them to us and listen very carefully to his homilies. Because I think there he'll spark a fire in our souls of other directions that we need to take.
We hear about dwindling numbers in the ranks of priests. Should the Vatican look at removing the celibate rule?
Well, I think, first of all, I can say that in a number of dioceses in the United States, we've had dramatic increases in the number of guys who are coming into the seminary. We've doubled our number in the course of the last 5 years. The fact is that, there are diminishing numbers because, for example, when I was ordained back in the mid-1970s, we were the baby boomers, so there were a lot more folks available who came into the seminary. So I think diminishing population is going to have its direct effect on the number of people who are going to be ordained. But I think another critical factor in all of this is that there have been diminishing numbers in organized religion across the board. And once again, I think it's been affected by what I addressed a little earlier in our little segment here about the focus on self, the focus on my needs, the focus on my being God with a small g instead of being there God with the divine reality of the God whom we believe in. You know, I think the issue of celibacy is a hot topic for an awful lot of people. And I think that, the reason for the discipline of celibacy, which has really been, a practice in the church from its entire history, but one that's been required since the 1100s, is that the attitude of every priest is one that sees the people whom we serve as being our family and having the total freedom to reach out to the needs of other people. And I think the reason why celibacy was placed as an expectation for those to be ordained to the priesthood is to model the life of Jesus. That, even in terms of his self-giving on the cross that we're going to be noting in a very particular way next week in Holy Week and especially on Good Friday, that it's that self-giving love that makes a person available to really serve the needs of other people. I think, people who argue and say, well, you know what, if you change the law of celibacy, you'd probably have a lot a greater increase in the number of candidates. Take a look at what's happening in other religions that do not have celibacy. They're saying the same thing, that the number of divinity students coming into ministry has diminished as well, too. So I think that the diminishing numbers has more to say about the secular view of the world in which we live in than the discipline of celibacy.
Should we have women priests?
Well, I think Pope John Paul II was pretty strong about saying that that wasn't even a possibility, and would use the example because, Jesus himself, he broke through, an awful lot of prejudices that existed in his day. Yeah, he did an awful lot of things that that fried an awful lot of people in organized religion. And I think that Pope John Paul II, and certainly was supported by Pope Benedict, said that if women were intended to be priests, that Jesus would have chosen women to be priests as well, too. And I know a lot of people get fired up about that and will argue against it. But I think at the same time, the mores that Jesus was the close relationship that he had with women. And you see that in the gospel, and that would have been frowned on because in the days of Jesus, women were considered to be second and third class citizens. And that can't be what happens today. And I think we see that there are lots of different important roles that people have in the church. And certainly I've been trying to, encourage and build up both men and women as leaders in our church in ways that that's true to the tradition, and the teachings of the church.
We've covered a lot of ground here today. David Zubik, Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh, joining us here in studio. Bishop Zubik, thank you for being with us. It's been an honor to have you, and allow me to be among the first to wish you a happy Easter.
Well, thank you very much, and it was great to be with you too, Paul. As we shake hands on it, we let that shaking of hands goes out to everyone who's listened to us today.
Thank you so much. Coming up, Pittsburgh native and world traveler Michael Clinton on his new book, The Globetrotter Diaries, when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.